Hello, and welcome to the Kill Radio Weekly News. This is your reporter, DJ Shy John. First of all, we'll start the news this morning with the Harper's Weekly Review, dated November 13th, 2012. Barack Hussein Obama was re-elected President of the United States, receiving 332 electoral votes to Mitt Romney's 206, and nearly sweeping battleground states. The Democratic Party enlarged its Senate majority, and the Republican Party retained control of the House of Representatives. "Man, sometimes God really sucks," said conservative radio host Glenn Beck. Fox News commentator Karl Rove, whose super PAC achieved a 1% success rate on the $104 million it invested in various races, challenged the network on air, claiming it had prematurely called Ohio and the election for Obama. "There's a bunch of cats and dogs elsewhere, which add up to another 720,000 votes," said Rove. "Is this just math that you do as a Republican to make yourself feel better?" asked anchor Megyn Kelly. An official President-elect Romney website went live after Romney had conceded. Private jets carrying guests to Romney's post-election party overwhelmed Boston's Logan International Airport, and staffers taking taxis home from Romney's concession speech found that their campaign credit cards had been canceled. "Fiscally conservative," said one aide. Maine, Maryland, and Washington became the first states to legalize same-sex marriage by referendum, and voters in Colorado and Washington approved the decriminalization of marijuana for recreational use. "Federal law still says marijuana is an illegal drug," said Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper. "Don't break out the Cheetos or goldfish too soon." CIA Director David Petraeus resigned after an FBI investigation revealed that he'd been involved in an extramarital affair with his biographer, Paula Broadwell. Former aides expressed surprise at Petraeus' infidelity. "I never heard him say, 'Wow, she was hot,'" said one. Israel fired across its border into Syria for the first time since 1973 after a stray mortar shell landed in the Golan Heights, and violence in northern Syria led at least 11,000 people to flee the country in one day. At a luxury hotel in Qatar, Syrian rebel groups formed a coalition in hopes of gaining international recognition and increased aid from foreign governments. Pakistani flag makers were anticipating increased sales of American flags for use in effigies following Barack Obama's re-election. Iranian fighter jets shot down an American Predator drone flying in international airspace. And Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad denied that the country was pursuing an atomic bomb. "Those who are stockpiling nuclear weapons," he said, "they are mentally retarded." First thing I've heard him say that was true. Jared Lee Loeffner, who killed six people in an assassination attempt on Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, was sentenced to seven consecutive life terms and 140 additional years in federal prison. Citing inclement weather, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, closed several centers dedicated to helping victims of Hurricane Sandy. And a National Guard truck transporting storm relief workers in New York City's Chinatown killed an 82-year-old man after running a red light. In Far Rockaway, Queens, six porta-potties and fuel for electric generators were stolen overnight from a tent acting as a temporary polling place. Mayor Michael Bloomberg issued an emergency order instituting gasoline rationing. Social pressure, he said, will ensure compliance. New Yorkers were trading gas for sex on Craigslist. The director general of the BBC resigned after one of the network's current affairs programs wrongly implicated a former member of parliament in a child sex abuse scandal. and Kevin Clash, the voice of Sesame Street's Elmo, took a leave of absence after he was accused of having sex with a teenage boy. Sesame Workshop said that it would continue to feature the character on the show. Elmo is bigger than any one person, the production company said in a statement. Police in Belize accused antivirus software programmer John McAfee, who had been abusing hallucinogenic drugs in pursuit of a super perv powder, of murdering an American expatriate. Users of the website Reddit accurately diagnosed a man with testicular cancer after he got a positive result from a pregnancy test. And four Nigerian girls developed a generator powered by urine. A 9-year-old Ukrainian boy stole $4,000 of his parents' savings from the family sofa and spent it on candy. A South African man suspected of selling body parts on the black market was arrested after police found his nephew's genitals in his wallet. Activities launched condom-filled balloons into North Korea, and Los Angeles pornographers blamed a recent syphilis outbreak and poor voter outreach for a referendum result mandating the use of condoms in adult films. Those of us in the industry who worked with the political strategists and consultants learned a lot, said pornographer Christian Mann. This article by Jacob Z. Gross. All right, I have one more article here. This comes from the website www.robertscottbell.com, the Robert Scott Bell Show. This is dated November 11th, and the article is by John Rappaport. The title, Proposition 37 Vote Fraud Update, 3.3 million votes still uncounted. When the networks and other media outlets made the early call on election night, claiming Proposition 37 had gone down to defeat, there were millions of votes still uncounted. I just checked the California Secretary of State's website, which is the official center for vote results, and there are 3,334,495 votes that remain unprocessed. Reading the county-by-county reports, the last date any of them reported in with numbers was November 8th, 3 days ago. Why is it taking so long for California to count all its votes? Why do so many remain uncounted at this late date? Yes, some of them are what's called provisional votes. That basically means they were turned in with errors, and those errors need to be tracked down and corrected. That takes time. But large numbers of uncounted votes must be electronic. What's the holdup? Looking at the most recent report on the Proposition 37 results, Proposition 37 is trailing by only 585,464 votes. Of the 3.3 million votes that remain uncounted, how many people voted on Proposition 37 one way or the other? We don't know. We can fiddle with estimate and projections and try to figure out how many people would have to vote yes on 37 for a victory, but, and this is very important, a large specter looms over all this. I really hope you get this. When the absurdly early call against Proposition 37 was made on election night, that was a clue. It was a red flag. It was a loud siren. Something is very wrong here. That was the message. From the moment that clue sprang forth, from the moment that siren went off, we had two choices. We could say, well, the TV networks are insane. They're crooked. So we need to get all the votes counted to see what the real result is. Or we could say, this early call against 37 suggests more criminality. Other crimes. How can we rely on the vote count at all? How can we assume, even when the other votes are counted, we're going to get a true result? The second conclusion is the correct one. This is what I've been saying for the past several days. Many people naively believe that the early call against Proposition 37 was the only problem. They assume the entire vote count, when it's finished, will be true and honest. Let's say you're investigating a jewel theft, and you see a guy walking down the street, and he has part of a big necklace hanging out of his pocket. Do you assume the necklace is the only stolen item he's carrying? Or do you infer the guy is loaded with other items from the theft? Here are two sources you can consult. The first is an extensive article by Victoria Collier about general vote count fraud. The second is the California Secretary of State's own 2007 top-to-bottom review of voting machines used in elections. This report is a mind-blower. It reveals massive opportunities for vote fraud. Should we blithely assume California has fixed all those problems? If you go to the website, you can find those two websites referred to. Recently, a team of the Argonne National Lab showed how a voting machine could be hacked and controlled using a small device that costs between $10 and $26. There was the famous 2010 experiment in which a team from Ann Arbor, Michigan, offered to hack the District of Columbia's voting system. They broke in and reversed the count in the mayoral election. They also fabricated absentee votes from overseas and canceled out the real votes. In my second article on the Proposition 37 scandal, I tracked the early media call against Proposition 37 on election night to its most probable source, the Associated Press. AP, the giant wire service, is officially a nonprofit owned by 1,400 member newspapers who use its services and also contribute articles. However, as everyone knows, the newspaper business in America is dying. Its bottom line is sitting in a lake of red ink, and the lake is sitting in an ocean of red ink. That means these newspapers and the corporations who own them have been refinancing their very existence with loans, and loans to pay off earlier loans. That means banks. Now you're getting into the oligarchy that owns the country. Does this sound too far-fetched? Too remote? Can we really say that the powers that be defeated Proposition 37? Well, remember that yes on 37 was a wedge against the assault on GMO food. It was the first of a number of dominoes that could fall against Monsanto and other GMO companies. Why? Because once consumers could see, labeled on the food they bought, whether it was GMO, they could make a choice. And surveys indicate that huge numbers of people don't want to eat GMO food, or at least are suspicious of it. Imagine what would happen if millions and millions of Americans, starting in California, rejected GMO food at the market. Is that a threat to the mega GMO corporations who want to own the patents on all food crops on the planet? Is the Pope Catholic? We also have more down-to-earth fiddling on Proposition 37. An instant classic press conference was held a few days before the election by the Yes on 37 forces. I was on that phone call. One by one, I heard reporters from major media outlets confuse and divert the whole issue of crimes committed by No on 37 forces. These reporters channeled the discussion into an irrelevant, nitpicking question. Has the FBI really opened a full-blown investigation into No on 37, or is really just an inquiry or a mild expression of interest? This theater of the absurd crashed the intent of the press conference, and the ensuing days, just as Election Day loomed, sure enough, stories appeared in the press. The gist of these stories was, no real FBI investigation. Yes on 37 had it wrong. And who's really deceiving who? What started out as an effort to expose very obvious lies and crimes committed by the No on 37 forces boomeranged completely. So all in all, there is substantial evidence that in the run-up to Election Day, and in the criminally insane early call against Proposition 37 on election night, very heavy hitters didn't want Proposition 37 to pass. Therefore, do we foolishly assume the ongoing vote count in California is going to be honest? Do we assume the votes that have already been counted and reported in California are true and honest? Do we accept that Proposition 37 is now trailing by 585,464 votes? No, no, and no. Many people would like to think we can assume honesty in these matters. It would be nice to believe in the system, but it would probably be a fatal error. John Rappaport, the author of an explosive collection, The Matrix Revealed. John was a candidate for a U.S. congressional seat in the 29th District of California. Nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, he has worked as an investigative reporter for 30 years, writing articles on politics, medicine, and health for CBS Health Watch, LA Weekly, Spin Magazine, Stern, and other newspapers and magazines in the U.S. and Europe. John has delivered lectures and seminars on global politics, health, logic, and creative power to audiences around the world. You can sign up for his free emails at www.nomorefakenews.com. Now, I have one more thing for you. I don't know if you know about this gentleman on YouTube. He has a lot of political editorials on YouTube. And his channel, or the man, is known as The Old Fart Rants. Now, this particular video came up December 21st, 2010. That long ago. But I really think it bears a listen. In fact, I think it's rather important in light of the way this country is going. I think I will let it speak for itself. It's 4 minutes and 40 seconds long.
Hey, everybody. It's Old Fart, your old buddy. How you doing? A guy named Dr. Lawrence Britt, who's a political scientist, did a study on fascism in which he found that the regimes of Hitler, Mussolini, Franco, Suharto, and Pinochet all had 14 things in common. This is the list he came up with. See how many of the 14 common characteristics of fascism you think apply to the United States today.
Fraudulent elections. Elections in a fascist country are a sham. Elections are either rigged or manipulated. Powerful nationalism. Fascist regimes make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are displayed everywhere as symbols, even as pins on clothing. Disdain for human rights. Fascist regimes use fear of enemies to persuade people that human rights can be ignored when it keeps them safe, causing them to approve of torture, executions, assassinations, and unlimited incarceration of prisoners. Enemies as a unifying cause. Fascist regimes rally people into a patriotic frenzy with a perceived common threat, which could be racial, ethnic, a religious minority, liberals, communists, socialists, or terrorists. Military supremacy. Fascist regimes give the military a disproportionate amount of government funding, even if the domestic agenda is neglected. Soldiers and military service are glamorized and glorified. Rampant sexism. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Opposition to abortion and homosexuals is promoted. Controlled mass media. Media is controlled by fascist regimes by using sympathetic media companies who dictate what their spokespeople say. Obsession with national security. Fascist regimes use fear as a motivational tool to gain power and control over the masses. Labor is suppressed. Organized labor is a threat to a fascist regime, so labor unions are either discredited, suppressed, or eliminated. Disdain for intellectuals. Fascist regimes promote hostility to higher education and intelligent people. Obsession with crime and punishment. Fascist regimes give the police almost limitless power, and people willingly give up their civil liberties to be safe and patriotic. Rampant corruption. Fascist regimes are governed by groups of people who appoint each other to government positions in order to protect themselves from accountability to the public. Religion and government are intertwined. Fascist regimes use the most common religion in a nation as a tool to manipulate public opinion. Religious rhetoric is common from government leaders, even when the major values of that religion are diametrically opposed to the government's actual policies. Corporate power is protected. The business aristocracies in a fascist country put government leaders into power, creating a mutually beneficial situation in which they thrive at the public's expense. So what do you think? Is the United States a fascist country? Please leave a comment, and thanks for watching. Be sure to rate and subscribe, too. And if you already are a subscriber, you know what I'm going to say next, so say it with me. Peace and love. That's where it's at.
Okay, people. Well, I guess that wraps up today's weekly news. Thanks to the whole Kill Radio News team. Have a good week, everybody. Be good to each other. And stay out of the news.